We're going to be looking at Exodus chapter 14 this morning. You might like to open there. I'll be reading most of the chapter as we go through here today. I've been going back to some of the stories that we're so familiar with and kind of reevaluating them. I was thinking, we often hear the stories about an onion. You see an onion at a store, or maybe you've got one at home, especially those big ball onions you get like at the grocery store. When you get them, they're brown on the outside and you don't really smell too much at all, but all you have to do is keep peeling those layers off of there, and then that smell comes wafting into the room. And for some of us, it makes our eyes tear up. And I don't really like onions on much food, but I do like the smell of them when they're fresh like that. And that's kind of an analogy of what I've been doing with some of these lessons that I've been looking at lately, is kind of digging a little bit deeper than what I've typically looked at them in the past. I can tell you the subject or the title of today's lesson, Dead Ends, is certainly one that I've felt a lot lately, probably for the last several years, and I think a number of you probably have run into this same thing too. You try to spend your life being a good spouse and a good father, and sometimes families don't stay together like you want them to, and so every bit of effort that you've put into that, it results in what you consider maybe a dead end. Or maybe you've got a job that you've worked at. You love the job, and you felt like it was a good place for you, but after so long that the job just can't sustain you anymore, or they just completely go out of business. And another dead end. And I started thinking about this this past week as I was driving down the road. This time of year, everybody's starting to do their spring cleaning, and we're right across the street from a pretty good-sized graveyard. And I just kept looking at all those tombstones, and I thought about all the people out there that had lives and did things like I do, or did things like you all do. Maybe they're from all around the world, and that's where they're at there. There's no further progress for them. And the original title I was going to do for the lesson today was Marble and Picket Fences, because every time I was going by some of these old graveyards, not over here, but when I'm driving around Jamestown or in places north of Sabina, that's pretty much what you see, is a bunch of graves and a picket fence around it, just to kind of decorate it like that. And it's like, what can we do when we get to a point in our life that we feel like we maybe have hit a dead end, and what encouragement can we get? And so we're going to take a look at some of those things today. My clicker is going to be going a little bit faster here than I have here planned for you, so we'll go ahead and get them all on the board. Whoops. Okay. So dead ends, one of the things that we typically think about dead ends, and if you're like me, we all live in an age where we've dealt with GPSs and we've got navigation, and some of us have phones that tell us how to get to places using our Android phones or our iPhones or whatever the case may be. And sometimes it tells you, this is exactly where you need to be, because I'm looking for a Walmart, or I'm looking for a grocery store, I'm looking for whatever it is. And we were just talking about some people of the congregation are away on vacation right now. And sometimes when you're on vacation, you don't know where you need to be, and so you depend on those GPS devices or your phones to tell you where you need to be. And I think we've all been burned by our GPS devices saying, nope, there's a Walmart right here, or there's a grocery store right here, or there's a store that you need to have right here, or a place to get food or gas or whatever the case may be, and you get there, and there is nothing there. Sometimes you've driven far to get there, but as it shows on the picture there, sometimes there's just a dead end. And sometimes those dead ends are there after you've made a long trip to get there. There's just the idea of having to turn around and go back is sometimes disturbing, especially if what you're looking for is gas for a car. And you get there and like, oh, now what do I do? So it can be scary. So the questions I have on the board behind me says, have you ever seen one? Have you ever seen a dead end or a dead end sign? Have you ever hit a dead end? Literally in your car, maybe you've gotten to the point there as we were just talking about, but talking personally for number two. Have you ever hit a dead end personally? Have you ever done something in your life that felt like it was going really well, only to end up with where you felt was just an empty spot? It didn't go like you wanted it to, and circumstances were against you. And part of that, number three there, is have you ever felt a dead end? Maybe things were going okay, but you just, as a career, you felt like I'd worked really hard in school to get here. I really wanted to do this. This job told me I was going to be able to do this and this and this, and I've done none of those things. And I'm always working. I'm always busy. They're always working me overtime, and I'm not getting anything done. Have you ever felt like your life is at a dead end? And it could be in your family, too. Sometimes things happen that way. But the fourth question there is, how did you feel about those situations? And if you're like me, when you hit those dead ends, you're like, how am I going to get past this? And I'll say that being a Christian doesn't insulate us from these negative feelings. We're going to look at some things today from the Exodus chapter 14 and just remind us that we're not alone in how we feel about these things. And I'm going to try to go quickly because this is a lot of text, as I've been saying for the last few lessons. But I really like going through all the text because I think it brings out things in the story sometimes that we've forgotten about. And again, I'm going to have to put a caveat here. Some of the numbers that I'm using certainly have been interpreted many ways over the years. I think myself, Kyle, and Cody, all of us have done lessons on the Exodus one way or another about the crossing the Red Sea and those kind of things. And there's always different stories that we can look back to historically trying to figure out how big was Israel at the time that they left Egypt, how many people had grown. The numbers are all over the place, but for today I'm going to focus on these numbers. These are the larger numbers that I've seen estimates on. But when Israel, and again, these are from commentaries, but when Israel made their exodus from Egypt, some estimates put the number of people between 4 and 6 million. Can't say that's a fact, but just we'll go with it for today. So just how many people is that? We talk about how big Israel was when they crossed, and if you're like me, you see a group, a fairly large group of people, but you don't really understand what that is. So let's take a look at how big that is. This picture here I pulled off the internet. This was for the 2016 when the people of Seoul were protesting their president and they were asking for his resignation. You can't see everything on there, but if you go a little bit past that picture that you see behind me, they estimated that about a million or over a million people were in this square. Now, we just said that some estimates, and again, this is authors trying to figure out based on size and population and growth and circumstances, they estimated that Israel could have been between, again, high numbers on this, between 4 and 6 million. So you see that many people right there, times 4 or times 6. And just think about that. If that is true, how big Israel was at that time, that really, to me, changes the dynamic about how difficult it was for them to get away from Egypt. Another picture here, and this is more recent. I'm a Broncos fan. I think there's a few other people are. Being born in Colorado, so this also shows about a million people. Not all the people are pictured here, but just over a million people were in this parade after the latest Super Bowl win of Denver when Peyton Manning was still with them and John Elway was still there. So again, look, that's a lot of people right there. Multiply that times 4 or 6 to that point. Just think about that. What we've seen in our minds in the past, if you're like me, you have not seen this many people trying to get away from Egypt, this many people trying to cross over the Red Sea to safety. And again, even if those numbers are exaggerated a little bit, just that many people is just almost impossible for me to understand. So as I take those two pictures, we're talking 4 to 6, again, estimates there, just basically taking all those pictures times 6, and you've got about 6 million people. So just the number of people there is just significant. So let's go to Exodus chapter 14 and start reading. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea opposite of Baal Ziphon." Now this is one thing that I think we sometimes forget about. We take all these estimates about where they crossed the Red Sea, but here, and again, some of these places have been lost to history or are somewhat not clear, but notice how this story starts off telling us exactly where we're talking about. "You shall camp before it by the sea, for Pharaoh will say to the children of Israel," this is God talking to Moses, prophesying, and not God always knows ahead of time what's going to happen, but he says, "Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land, and the wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord." And they did so. Every time I go to these hardening of heart things, I think about some of the conversations that Kayla has brought up in class, and I always pay extra attention to what's going on there. But in this case, we do see God saying that he was going to harden Pharaoh's heart, but we also see why he said he was going to do it. He says, "I'm going to harden his heart, but I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over his honor and over his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord." And so this is a useful thing for us to kind of reflect on. Continuing on, verse 5. Now it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? Well, if you just back up a few chapters there, you can see why most of the beginning of Exodus is exactly why they let him go. Because they were just, everything bad was happening because they were there. And so kind of factors into this dead end topic today. So he made ready his chariot, and he took his people with him. Also, he took 600 choice chariots, all the chariots of Egypt, with captains over every one of them. We're going to be looking at that in just a moment, too, just to kind of pay attention to some numbers. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went with boldness. So the Egyptians pursued them, all their horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them, camping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth, before Baal Zephon. So again, we see where they're at there. Whether we know where these places are exactly is questionable, but just pay attention to that. So we've got these people have left. It even says Israel have left with boldness. So this whole topic is not even in their minds yet. They have finally got an out from this difficulty that they've been in for so many years. I believe it was around 430 years that they were basically in Egypt. One thing I thought was noteworthy about that, often dead ends result in a very positive beginning. Remember why the children of Israel were in Egypt. That was because when Joseph went there, he was raised up in power, his family was brought to him, he was lifted up, and he was basically a controller of most of the country, aside from the king of Egypt himself. And so it started off very positively, but now they've kind of gotten into a bad spot. Not looking at that. So where can you put that many people on the run? Remember, we have all these pictures up here. We said there was about 1 million in each one of those pictures, and times 6, if those high numbers were accurate, that's about 6 million people trying to get away from this country and trying to move on. So how can you do that? Exodus 14, starting with verse 10. When Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? And again, thinking about all those graves over there, it would have been better just to stay there and die. And over again, we're going to see this from the children of Israel. Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians, that we should die in the wilderness. You know, at the time, their dead end was just being stuck in Egypt. They didn't want to be there, but they did have food, and they did have the things that they felt they were going to have, but they still knew they were miserable. And now they're afraid that they're going to die in the wilderness. So already, remember, the number of people we're looking at, if that is the high number, they're all saying that we're going to die here in the wilderness because of all these people chasing us down. Going back to the sign of the dead end. Exodus 14, starting with verse 13. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Just think about that for a second. Usually when we're trying to do something that's going to aid us, it has to be action-oriented. It has to be an activity. We have to run or hide or do something. Here Moses says, stand still. Let God take care of this. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. I think just that last little bit of that verse there is one that I've skipped over so often. Remember, these people are all talking, and when we go back to those numbers of people, if it is that high number of 6 million people, can you imagine that many people being unsatisfied and complaining and talking to one person that represents the whole group of people to God, and he says, hey, shush, be quiet, God's going to take care of this. So again, how would you feel in that situation, facing that dead end? We're going to pay attention to something. Remember, they're being pursued on the backside, and I'm not sure they're clear what's happening on the front side, but we'll see that in just a moment. Starting with verse 15, and the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward, but lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I indeed will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. So I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over his armies and his chariots and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. So again, that same point that I made earlier about the hardening of hearts. Here you see why that was done, and I think it's important for us to see that. But remember, the people know that they're camped out by the sea. I'm not sure if they can see the sea at this time, but they're close enough that they have to know where they're at. And the way that God is talking to them here is they say the people need to go forward to the sea. So think about that. I'm going to the sea. I know that there's just water there. We don't have a boat big enough for this many people. How are we going to get through this? And look behind me. There is a bunch of people, chariot riders and horsemen and just soldiers all coming after us. There's just not going to be a way out of this that's going to work out. Even though God's talking to Moses, what's going to happen? So again, that dead-end sign. Exodus 14:19-20. And the angel of God, who went before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. Remember, sometimes we forget about that pillar of cloud. It was with the children of Israel as they left Egypt. And so it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And thus it was a cloud of darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other, so that one did not come near the other all night. So just think about that. The Egyptians also have run into a dead end. They have got to a place that they are unsure why this is happening. They are very strong warriors. They have success. They historically, secular history shows the Egyptians during this time did very well. And so they are about to come down on these people with a significant force, and now they can't. Something's blocking them. And remember what God said he was going to do. He was going to cause a hardness of heart to bring about the fact that these people would see that he is stronger than what they consider their gods. So again, we've talked about this, all kinds of different routes over time. I've got the text on there. It says, so where are the people trying to cross? This is a Steve Rudd map that I was using. I've gone back to some of his stuff from time to time. We've talked about different places over time, but I think for the most of what I've seen has been accurate this way. Can't tell you 100%, but this seems to be what's very popular. So this shows the route there. If you can see up on over above me on this side, the land of Goshen, as it's described there, was where the children of Israel were living in their servitude to Egypt. The red line shows that they went down in between those two divisions or two gulfs of the Red Sea, and then they got down to where the historically the view is that the three cities or the three places that were mentioned earlier where the people were camping were all down there on that bottom basically peninsula of the south part of the land space there. So continuing on, we'll zoom in on it a little bit. When you use Google Maps to try to go into places, you typically see the language or English versions of that. So just zooming in here where the people are at. Taking the same map from the Steve Rudd map again and looking here about what he feels or the others feel that the crossing could be. Notice right there in pink, right above the where it says 250, there's the pink lines right there. Because I'm going to switch over to the satellite view of this in just a moment. You can see that there's those little areas there that are kind of between those land masses there. And you can also see because the topography of that map view there that it's more shallow in that area than it is in other places. And again, I don't know exactly where they crossed, but it does seem to be a place that was conceivable. Now, remember how many people we're talking about. We're talking about dead ends. So all those people, if it was up to 6 million people, just that number of people trying to get from one side of that to the other side. It looks like a big space. When you back up and you go to this first map, if I can get back there without breaking anything, that doesn't look like it's too hard because we're so far above that space. But when we zoom in, we zoom in there, that looks like a pretty far distance. You can just barely see what looks to be an aircraft landing zone there and some other things. But even that 6 million people would be hard to see from this distance. So again, notice those what looks like islands there in the middle. You can see the text there. It says the Straits of Tiran. So you go down to this picture. This is a Google Maps picture of putting a person on the shore of that area and looking across that gulf or that span of water there. And what I've got there showing, the arrow is showing where one of those peaks is in that land area between there. So that's why I've got the red line drawn from that little inset over to that. So when we think about crossing the Red Sea, again, I don't know where that was, but if some of the people that do these kind of things and study think this is maybe where that took place, just think about that many people going this distance across water and through water on dry land. It's significant. Also changes what we think about when we look at some of the text we're going to wrap up with. So talk about being stuck between a rock and a hard place. So far, the problems are them trying to get across this water. They know behind them is the Egyptians, but what exactly are they facing with the Egyptians? So we've got all these people trying to get across that water. One of the things I started doing on here, and you'll have to excuse my drawings, I was worried that the Canes might be here today and might give me a hard time about my horse shapes there, but just go with me that they're accurate. Based on what I was studying, if you try to figure out about the dimensions of a typical Egyptian chariot, they often were pulled by two horses. They were about 6 feet wide from hub to hub on the width of the wheels there. A horse is typically about 8 feet long from nose to tail. And from what I was looking at on trying to get through the Egyptian records, often a lot of those were about 13 feet long. And I'm just assuming that they were talking 13 feet, including the horse. So if my measurements are wrong there, I apologize. But I think we've all seen what some of the chariot riders look like inside there. So that's one thing there. That's one measurement of a chariot rider, one man inside of a chariot with a horse team on there. Remember how many people that Pharaoh said that he was going to send of his best chariots. So let's get to that. So you take that first one and you multiply it to get 33. So if you just look on the board behind me, you can see that's about how many 33 chariots is. We keep on going. There's 116. How many did Pharaoh said that he was going to send out of his best? He said 600, right? We'll look at that. I think we'll look back at that in just a moment, but it was in the text. So he said, I'm going to send 600 of my best chariots after the people. He also said he was going to send other chariots, depending on which version you're reading. And so I don't know how many that could have been. Maybe the 600 were the best, and then there was another 600. So for the point of making it clear, just for our conversation today, I did just that. That's 1,200 of the chariots that we just saw a minute ago. Now, just by that self, can you imagine, those people probably weren't running all that wide across the land. They were probably on roads following the children of Israel. So just imagine how long that caravan of warriors would have been. And you notice when the first time Israel sees these people coming, they talk about the soldiers. So they weren't just streaming out in front of these people that were walking. They were all together coming along. What else did they have to face on there? It wasn't just the men standing on chariots and horses coming after them that they feared. There was another thing. And from what I was reading into this, most charioteers would often carry all the armament that you see before you. They would have longbows. The Egyptian longbows at this time were extremely good. If you look back some of the history that they had adopted some of these techniques from other people in the northern areas of that region. And they often were composite bows. So anybody that understands what it takes to shoot a bow or make a bow, they actually were made from multiple different things of animal hides wrapped around different materials like wood and bone and things like that. From what I could understand, most of the time they had two sheaths full of arrows, anywhere from 10 to 21 per sheath. They also carried a spear with them most of the time when they were on the chariot. They always had a knife with them. They had at least one sword, sometimes two. And just for driving the chariot, they had whips. So every charioteer that you see pictured there in that number of the 600 or maybe up to 1,200 had all this weaponry that they could unleash on the children of Israel. So when it says that they were afraid, there was a real good reason for that. Continuing on our story, verse 21, then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went after them in the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and his horsemen. So again, keep taking you back. I think we've got another picture or two here of just reminding us how many people of Israel there could have been in this thing here as they were trying to get across here. Also pay attention, I don't want to get into it because I think I'm still having trouble trying to digest it myself, but there's a long time frame that it takes place after the children of Israel get started and when Egypt starts following them too. So again, back on the dead end sign, verse 24 starting, "Now it came to pass in the morning watch that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians in the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians, and he took off their chariot wheels." Do you remember that from the story? I didn't remember that. "So that they drove them with difficulty, and the Egyptians said, 'Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians.'" So once again, the idea of dead ends there, you've got a very strong army that's usually having no problem with the success. They're trying to chase down basically just an ordinary batch of people that they already know probably have almost no armament and are carrying with them a lot of the spoils that they took leaving Egypt. I think this should be a cinch, and it's not. They're having so much problem with this pillar of cloud and this pillar of darkness, and now their wheels are falling off their chariots. It's like, we want out of here. So they are facing dead ends here too. Verse 26, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back on the Egyptians, on their chariots, and on their horsemen.' And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and when morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. Then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and the army of Pharaoh that it came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained, but the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left." And again, you just can't keep reminding yourselves about even whatever those numbers were, it was much bigger deal than what we sometimes think about. "So the Lord saved Israel that day on the hand of the Egyptians," starting with verse 30. "And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw a great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses." So this great thing happened. Remember, though, the great thing happened when they left Egypt. All the plagues happened, and the people saw the mighty works of God. And they still weren't willing to leave without some encouragement from Moses. Now they see this great work done. The fact that they were able to walk across a body of water that they should not be able to walk across, with the great number that they had, whatever that number was, they see what happened to the Egyptian army, and there was probably, we talked about 600 chariots. It's very possible that they, even if they didn't have another 600 with them, they certainly had two or three or four times that many men walking as soldiers. So they see all this, and it said not one of them survived from what we just read. And so this dead end, they see, the people see this dead end, and they think, well, how could you today, looking back at this, say, how could you not have faith in God? Well, let's find out. Exodus 15, I was going to read that. I knew we would not have time today, but verses 1 through 21, I encourage you to read that on your own if you have time, but it's the song of Moses and the children of Israel and the song of Miriam. And it just basically is just melodic verses of about what they saw, what they witnessed, how this great powerful force was just overcome by God, and really a song about what I'm talking about today, a dead end that was not a dead end. It was a dead end for the Egyptians, but for those that believed in God, it was not an end point. They had something beyond what they thought was possible. In Exodus 15, when you get past the song of Moses and the people and Miriam, it says, "So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and then when they went there 3 days in the wilderness, found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the water of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, 'What shall we drink?'" All the things that happened in Egypt, the people got out of there. All the things that happened on this journey, crossing the Red Sea, and what happened to the Egyptians, the people got out of there. And once again, they're already trying to figure out, how are we going to make it? How are we going to be able to drink something? Because this water is not good. We're going to see that in other places. But in Exodus chapter 16 through 17, we'll see more dead ends. The people asking, they're starving. They had food in Egypt, but now they're going to die in the wilderness. We don't have bread. We don't have meat. God provides both of them to them. And then again, there's another time that they're thirsty, and that's when they get the water from the rock. So even looking back at these people, I want to make 2 points. First of all, when we feel like sometimes we stop having the right faith and trust in God, it's not unusual. Everybody that has been a part of God's people have dealt with that. It doesn't mean that it's good, certainly not what God wants, but it is a tendency of human beings to be focused on this. Eyes, flesh, thirst, whatever the case may be, we're worried about our senses. And these people often were too. So the things that I'm hoping that we could learn from this story that we're all familiar with, but maybe reminded of some of the details that we can learn today. First of all, with God, dead ends don't exist, even if they seem to. I can tell you, the last few weeks, for those of you that follow me on Facebook, you know that I keep running into things that have been very painful. With the house, or the marriage that failed, and with job stuff, all those things have been huge, huge problems for me. And God's gotten me through them so far. I've been dealing with this house and the construction there, and over again, I think I got things under control, and there's something new to deal with. And then I get that under control, and then my car has problems week after week. It's like, God, I can't take this. But He keeps getting me through. And it's so important for us just to remember to put our trust and prayers and faith in God and try to do what He said, what Moses told the people to do. Stand still. Hold your peace. Focus on God and let Him get it done. Second point that we can learn from this story today is that God takes care of His children. And to be a part of God's children, we all know what that takes. But He will not let us down, even if it seems like it. And again, dead ends are absolutely frightening to us when we see them. Number three, God will test us to see how much we trust Him. He's done that throughout Scripture. He will continue to do that to us today. How am I going to deal with this? And with the right attitude, with focusing on God, we can get through it, even if it's not enjoyable. Number four, recognizing God is not enough. The Egyptians did that. Remember when we were reading the story and it said the Lord is fighting for the children of Israel. He's taking our wheels off our chariots and this cloud that won't let us pass and it's keeping us in darkness. Those people recognized who their God was, who Israel's God was, but it didn't save them. And that's important for us to remember. Recognizing God is not enough. Just recognizing Him. We need to be able to do what He asks of us. And finally, number five, being obedient, faithful, and trusting and active is key. You know, being obedient is one thing. If you're told to do something and you do it, that's great. If you're faithful, that means that you're doing that regularly. Your parent can tell you, hey, go do this. And you're like, I don't have to worry about that kid because that kid's going to take care of it. Or as a worker, you know your boss is going to say, hey, man, Roger's going to be here even if we can't make it. He's going to get this done. Are we being trusting? Are we trusting in God and those around us? But most of all, being active is key. I think we all have an active deficit. We do things for ourselves, but things for God, sometimes we have that deficit, and that's one thing that we need to get past. That dead end sometimes is on us. We are making the dead end possible. And six, what dead ends are you facing? So when I ask all of us, what dead ends are you facing? Are you facing financial hardships? Are you facing health hardships? Are you facing encouragement hardships? A low spirituality? Are you afraid of what the future holds for you? Are you feeling life is too difficult? What dead end are you looking at? And finally, with that same question, are you God's? That is the thing that has saved all mankind, that has been part of God's people from the very beginning of Genesis all the way through Revelations. If you're God's, He says He will take care of you. And we understand what being God's is. We have to be baptized into Christ. We have to be part of the church, and we have to be active, just like the previous question said. So, again, another lesson where we've looked back at something that was kind of an old story. I pray that something new came from it. It did for me. I felt like I studied some things that I hadn't looked at before, and I tried to bring those to our attention. But most of all, I just want to impress on all of us, and myself too, dead ends are all over there. They're all around us. They're always going to come up. Every time we think we're doing good, we're going to run into one. We just need to be able to handle how we deal with it. And most of all, let God know that we are trusting in Him through our obedience. So this morning, I encourage you to come forward if you have anything that could be said or done for you. We will take care of those things and share if needed at this time as you stand and sing the song for the invitation.